Mini episode 1871 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1871. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris with you here today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, our FDH Hoops analyst, Ben Chu, joining us as always from his perch in Portland. I will forego the very easy joke about thanking him for wiping the pepper spray out of his eyes to be here today under the circumstances, but always glad to have Ben here. We're breaking down the 2025-2026 NBA season, and a lot to look forward to. The first season with the return of NBC to the coverage, among other things here. It's a bye-bye Turner Broadcasting, and again, a new era for broadcasting with the NBA, with Amazon as well. The broadcasting is just one part of it. We have many star injuries, which are going to affect the course of the season. We'll get into all that and much, much more. Ben Chu, thank you as always, my man. Great to have you here with us.
Oh, no problem, Rick. As we all know, these glasses, they do nothing.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So a lot to be able to get to here because, again, one of the big stories coming into this season was you go back to last season and the playoffs and the injuries that are going to define the season here in terms of Milwaukee, Boston, Indiana suffering very grievous injuries in particular here. Now Houston joins them with Fred VanVleet on the sidelines. And so this is one of these circumstances where the first three teams in the Eastern Conference, I think more or less taking themselves out of the mix. Houston is going to try to regroup. They were the number one seed a year ago, albeit again, a pretty fugazi number two seed as we saw. But so much to be able to get to in terms of looking at this landscape, how this plays out, and a number of teams that are going to end up taking the proverbial gap year, it seems like.
Right, and I think one of the big things too, Rick, is that while the Eastern Conference is clearly weaker based off of those injuries to Halliburton and Tatum, the West is not as great as people think either. If you just look top to bottom, there's just a couple of top teams, and then there's a whole lot of we don't know at this period of time.
Yes, that is true. It is quite a grab bag. And then for Houston, and we'll get to the Western Conference subsequently here, but one of the key things that we're always looking at here is teams' timelines. And ever since Udoka was brought in to be the head coach, it was always a very intriguing situation in terms of this is a young team that's rebuilding, that's trying to find its way, but you've accelerated the timetable significantly when you bring in a coach that indicates that it's win now mode and that he was there to kind of help these kids grow up quicker than they might otherwise and accelerate the timeline. The fact that they got the number two seed a year ago shows that it's working to some degree, but then you accelerate it again with the move of bringing in Kevin Durant in the offseason here. So it's an awkward situation because they lose VanVleet and they have to figure out something at point guard here because, again, the clock is ticking with Durant. This is a win now kind of a move if ever there was one. So Houston being one of the only teams in the West that was right there on Oklahoma City's tail, this is a situation where the Thunder are breathing a heck of a lot easier knowing that VanVleet will not be spending the year playing for the Rockets.
Right, and I think one of the big questions in the offseason was how does this rotation look for Udoka? Obviously now with no VanVleet, you're going to see a lot of Amen Thompson at point. You're going to see a little bit more Reed Shepard, and you know they still have Aaron Holiday is also on the roster. I would be very, very shocked, Rick, if this Houston team starts out within the first top four teams of the Western Conference, that they don't make a move to get someone who's at least more of a stability scenario, a guy like a Malcolm Brogdon, even though he's in New York right now, just someone to be a table setter at some periods of time, because we saw in, you know, in Phoenix, Kevin Durant was able to isolate a little bit, create offense, but the real concern is going to be is at that guard position, because we've seen that, you know, while point guard, I would say, is not as important as it used to be in the NBA, it still matters. You still need to have one that can make plays. And again, Fred VanVleet had some regression issues last year, didn't have the strongest playoff series against Golden State, but he is a guy that is very steady at that. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Udoka does. And again, he has a lot of great young, talented players still on that roster. So they can mix and match. And I expect at least for the first half of the season, they're going to be more focused in on trying to figure out what is the best possible scenario. And again, too, we know too, Van Vliet's nearing the end of his contract there. And I don't think they were super excited to retain him regardless. So
in terms of them possibly bringing in a Derek White, do you see any validity to that in terms of them swinging and making a move? It would end up parting with at least one of these prized young pieces that they have if they're right. To do something
and
like
I,
that.
And I would at least make the argument too, Rick. At least for now, I think they're going to at least see what they have in Thompson at the point of Reed Shepard, because mm-hmm. One of the big questions last year wasn't necessarily that Reed Shepard didn't play well. He played well in the G League. It was just more they just didn't have enough space in the rotation, so you spend a number three pick on a guy like this is kind of your make or break point, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so. I've always been a big Reed Shepard guy. I had him ranked as the number one prospect in that draft. Anybody that gets compared to my favorite NBA player, Mark Price, in terms of his game, is somebody that I'm naturally going to cotton to. And again, he's got a lot of upside. It's just how much of it can be realized this year. And at this point, I'm thinking, let's stay on the Western Conference here. So as we're looking at the other teams that could be potential threats to Oklahoma City, Denver is in the mix. They kind of doubled down in the offseason on trying to win now. You've got Golden State trying to win now. I don't know what exactly that looks like. I don't think their ceiling's that high. The Lakers are a team that seems to have one foot in both camps here as far as trying to win now, but also trying to win for in the future with Luka, which is frustrating to LeBron. So in terms of these teams or anybody else, like possibly Minnesota, do you see anybody in there possibly being able to rise up and give any type of a real challenge to Oklahoma City? And in the case of Minnesota, considering that they have come up short previously with much the same roster.
Right. And I think it's patently very obvious at this point, it's Denver at the, you know, the one issue, like, again, they took them to a 7-game series. They also had the lead in game 4 of that series at home and just couldn't close the door. So they got better. They got deeper. I honestly think getting a Cam Johnson, who was definitely healthier than last year, that Michael Porter Jr. was in that playoff series, they have a distinct opportunity to make a run. Minnesota, we have to consider them as well. They're still very good. We'll probably see a little bit more of Rob Dillingham this year as their backup point guard. And we'll see how they decide to make up their roster, especially now with Mark Orr and Alex Rodriguez gaining official ownership of this team at some point during the season. It's going to be very interesting to see. And again, it kind of, like we've noted before, Rick, it's a hodgepodge of a lot of good to mad teams right now. So it's really hard to tell. I think the Lakers, again, you can never discount a team that has Luka Doncic and LeBron James on the same roster. But when your offseason acquisitions are pretty much DeAndre and just pieces around them, like I just find it very hard to think that they're going to be able to beat some of these tougher teams in there. And the Clippers, we don't even need to talk about the Clippers. They're an interesting story right now, to say the least. But yeah, I'm honestly, to be real, Rick, I'm much more interested in the back half of the West, because I feel like there's just someone's going to break into that sort of tail end of the pack. The teams like New Orleans and Portland and San Antonio, I think, are a lot more interesting than some of these mid-tier teams in the West, where we all kind of know where they're going to end up, which is either one and done in the playoffs or they'll get to a semifinal.
Yeah, because you've got a number of teams that have got kind of an awkward build. Phoenix is one of the top ones that comes to mind right now. Like, the stupid ownership doesn't want to admit that they're in a rebuilding situation, but they are. It's going to get forced upon them. But, yeah, what does that look like? Again, Portland – You make the Lillard trade here, and like I don't even know what the deal is with that. Like, why you would be looking at fitting him back in what a year and a half I think after the trade was made. You already have with Milwaukee, like a very clogged backcourt to begin with. So I don't really understand that one there. Like, what are you saying locally about that? What are people saying locally?
I mean, I think it's just to mainly bring Lillard back, but I also know too that they want someone to tutor Scoot Henderson, who had kind of a better second half of the season more than anything else. But I guess really at the end, they got him for essentially nothing at this point. Like,
they did.
So when you get something for nothing, it's really hard. And again, one team I didn't mention, but we should mention, we need to talk about Dallas and Cooper Flagg and Anthony Davis. And if they can get Kyrie back at something, whether it's later in this year or next season, that is definitely a team that can shake up the top four in the Western Conference.
Talk about disparate timelines. Yeah, I mean, Dallas is just brimming with them, putting Cooper Flagg in with what Nico had called a win-now situation, hilariously so. In the case of Lillard and Portland, again, you get the sense that much like the last time he was in Portland, this is not where his career is going to end up. So it strikes me that in terms of, because again, athletes have these goals for their career. And Lillard, I'm sure, was always a guy that saw himself as, I'm going to be part of the big two or big three of a championship team. And now, I mean, I think that's pretty much out the window. But, like, I think he's down to, like, is there any place that I can be circa Gary Payton 06 with the Heat? Like to be somebody that's a contributor to help them. I think, didn't Bob McAdoo, I think, get a title with the Lakers, I think? Yeah, like, that kind of a thing. I think that's where Lillard's at right now.
So and I also think he probably thought, too, that dealing with that same injury, too, that, you know, at least again, this is not quoted from him, but at least the tea leaves during a lot of his interviews back in this region, he's essentially come out and said, like, he kind of missed being here. And he's still, you know, he has kids in the region, too. And
sure,
there's a lot of other things that play. And again, too, I think the real question, and let's just be honest, I do not know how important a single championship is to Damian Lillard at this point in his career. Like, it's okay. Clearly would matter and it would impact his life, but let's be honest, like, I don't think anyone's going to put him as a top five point guard of all time, even though he has statistics to back that scenario up with. But it feels like I don't think it's very similar to, like, the Russell Westbrook argument that some fans will make, is that do championships essentially tell the entire story, especially if you have statistics that put you up in those regions?
Yeah. I mean, that's a very interesting question. Yeah. And where he slots in all time. And obviously historians will slot him a little higher if there is a title in the mix, but like you said, how much difference is that going to make exactly? I mean, I don't think it's going to make.
I'd use a comparison. Like, this doesn't feel like a Dirk Nowitzki situation.
No.
Where I think Lillard's legacy will be bigger if he even winning a ring as like a secondary, as a six man piece.
Sure.
On the Blazer team means more than just him winning another ring with another random player.
Yeah. Well, and so again, it will be very interesting to see how that all shakes out and the young core with Portland and whether or not it will be feasible for him to be a contributing player on a championship team there subsequently. Won't be this year, as we well know. But in terms of young teams here, when you're talking about teams outside the obvious contenders in the Western Conference, so when we look in the general Southwest direction, and again, while the Thunder are not in the Southwest division, should be geographically, they were the surprise jump-up team of 2 years ago. Houston was last year. This year, I don't know how big of a surprise it'll be, but I mean, I think it's going to be San Antonio. I think year three of Wemby, he's back. Thankfully, the blood clot thing appears to be a matter of the past, and what they've continued to do to build around him. I'm not saying that they're a contender to win the Western Conference, but as far as a team that could make the second round of the playoffs, maybe the third round, if they're not on the same side of the bracket as Oklahoma City, I don't think it's out of the question. I think this is the year that San Antonio really starts to become who they're going to become for the next several years.
Right. And again, I think we all, both you and me, know, Rick, their issue right now is shooting right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they, if you you look up and down the roster, you have a lot of great players, including De'Aaron Fox, who I know is returning from an injury, but you get the overall number two pick in Dylan Harper. You have the rookie of the year last year in Castle. You now have a little bit more depth at the big guy position. I think one of the, we discussed this too, one of the more hidden moves was to pick up, I'm blanking on the name right now, but to fortify their backcourt essentially at the end of the day.
Okay. Because if we're being honest,
it was pretty, the one thing we noticed after watching a lot of the Spurs games, like there was no one behind Wemby essentially. They were using Zach Collins for a bit there, but he was essentially nearing the end of his time overall. So.
Right. Well, in terms of the San Antonio roster, taking a look at it here, courtesy of CBS Sports, you've got – so Luke Kornet in the backup spot at center. And, again, getting to see, more of Harrison Barnes at power forward, that is going to be something that – that's a guy that comes with a winning background, certainly. And, just looking up and down this roster – Barnes and Fox providing, the veteran leadership here to this roster, being a little bit more well-rounded in terms of just being a young bunch of guys. And I think that what they end up doing is going to be fascinating. And I think, again, they could end up making a run that would surprise a number of people. It wouldn't surprise me. At the end of the day, in looking at the Western Conference, my predictions here from Fantasy Hoops Draftology 2025, available on the main page of fantasydrafthelp.com. I do have in the conference semis, I've got number one, Oklahoma City over number four, Minnesota in six, number three, Houston over number two, Denver in seven. I think one way or another, Houston is going to figure it out with the point guard spot. I'm going to say Oklahoma City over Houston for the Western Conference. I'm guessing that you're going to say that is probably a reasonable facsimile, at least.
I think so, yeah. I have OKC versus Denver, but I still think OKC right now is the favorite of the West.
Yeah, I think they are. And then in the Eastern Conference, I would say more or less by default, and I freely admit this is a lifelong Cavs fan, I think the definitive favorite in the East is going to be the Cavs.
I'm going to hold on definitive.
I'm going to say relatively definitive. 64 wins a year ago, three good legs between the three best players in the playoffs.
I was going to come out and say this right now, Rick. I don't like definitive as a rule with this Cavs team at this current period.
Okay, and that's fine. But I would say,
but we are in the clubhouse, yes.
Look, I mean, if anybody should be scared of jinxing them, it's me, but I have to be dispassionate here. And if I got to go with what I see, I can't hold back because I don't want to jinx my team. But I mean, in looking at it here again, subtle moves made in the offseason here that I think are going to really, really pay some dividends. Nobody's really paying attention around the league to this, but the combination of Larry Nance Jr. and Thomas Bryant to play the backup four and five spots here. This is, if the team had a hole a year ago, and I think hole would be, kind of an exaggerated term, because Dean Wade, when healthy, can steal some minutes there. Some of the other guys can steal some minutes there. But you were really looking at a situation here. Push comes to shove. You need somebody to eat some minutes. You're looking at Tristan Thompson. So it's a big glow up in terms of what they had at the backup four, backup five spots a year ago. It's a subtle thing, and that may be why the national media hasn't paid much attention to it. But I would expect that to be one of the stories that really kind of punches above its weight as far as impact on the court.
And my big thing, too, is those are great acquisitions. But I do think Lonzo Ball obviously is going to play a big role on this team. And we saw essentially what happened last year when – essentially, you're forced to play Garland and Mitchell together. There is an issue with the defense for Cleveland. So getting at least a guy who has height and is a positive defender on the floor is going to matter. Again, the real question ultimately with me with Cleveland is how you integrate these new parts into a newer roster. Like, you did lose Ty Jerome in the offseason, so you're going to lose a little bit of that scoring punch you have for the first sort of 50 games of the regular season that they absolutely kind of rolled through relatively quickly. And it's going to really be, honestly, and it's Atkinson's second season. It's kind of now the national media, or at least how the perception of everything is right now. Like, this is kind of the make or break year for Cleveland, because they have a pretty, outside of the New York Knicks, a very simple road path to get to the NBA Finals. So it will be very surprising that change will come if they cannot get at least to the conference finals.
Well, yeah, and that's a thing where, and again, and you and I have largely off air gone back and forth over this about regression of the mean, progression of the mean. The Cavs' luck injury-wise a year ago was like better than anybody's. And then in the playoffs, boom, it hit like an anvil dropping. So it's a thing this year where that won't be the case because Garland is going to miss the first chunk of the season. Max Strus is going to miss the first chunk of the season. So this is where these new parts get to really kind of show themselves. We're going to get to see Ball to a great degree here, and we're going to get to see some young players where you talk about make or break. It's a make or break moment for Craig Porter Jr. It definitely is because they're not going to want to lean on Lonzo Ball too hard for obvious reasons with his injury history. Craig Porter Jr. will have opportunities to show that he can do it in more than flashes. And I think Jalen Tyson is a guy where you're going to see a lot from him out there because that's a guy where I think initially I would classify it as he can steal some moments at point guard. He may show over the long haul that he's legit playing backup point guard minutes as well as other spots on the floor. And this is a thing where, again, and it's a mouthful to say this about any player because the toughest thing to do in the NBA is to learn to shoot and shoot from distance. But like Tyson's a guy where he's such a Swiss Army knife. If this guy ever becomes a shooter to any degree, I don't know about superstar, but he's a guy that can become a star. And he's really going to get a chance to show what he can do this season in the early part of the season. So it's going to be very, very exciting to watch how this roster plays out around the margins of the starting rotation and or the starting lineup and even the rotation as a whole, I would say, Ben.
And I think the big question, again, ultimately is the regular season, I feel like just because how bad just the top to bottom is in both conferences, the Cavs are probably at least going to get a 50-55 win season. My real question is how does Atkinson treat the playoff rotation? And who is going to be used, who is not going to be used? Because there was some times last year in some of those blowout games against the Pacers where I felt his rotations kind of lacked in periods of time where he was just trying to get a lot of players in the game just to fulfill what the regular season was. But you also have to make some minor adjustments. And again, too, it's going to be, again, like I noted when we introduced the Eastern Conference, like unless a team like Orlando or a team like Atlanta just comes out of nowhere and is that dramatically better than last season, it feels almost like it's fated that we're going to see a Knicks-Cavaliers Eastern Conference Finals at this point.
It seems like it's shaping up that way, and spoiler alert, that is how I have it playing out. But again, the Knicks are the obvious other team in the mix here. Again, with Boston falling by the wayside, because again, this is going to be a gap year for them as it is for Indiana. The national media seems to be pushing Philadelphia with all their might right now. And it's just like, do they think there's a regenerating machine out there for like Billy Cunningham and Mo Cheeks and Dr. J and Barkley? Like, they can't let go of Philadelphia. They just really can't because that's a team where, again, their time has come and gone, with all due respect to my good pal Joe Stazak, the FDH Lounge dignitary extraordinaire. But, yeah, it's going to be the Knicks in that division more or less by default. That's a term we're using a lot in the Eastern Conference, by default, I would say.
And, I mean, my thing, too, is that he's still – it's not – I would make this analogy, Rick. I don't think it's as bad as people are going to think. And the real question, ultimately, we're going to have to ask ourselves is, Jason Tatum going to try to rush himself back at the end of the season if Boston's somewhere in relative contention? Because I know there's that discussion. He came out about 2 weeks ago saying that he would consider playing depending on how his rehab's going and where the Celtics were in the pecking order at that period of time. But it feels more like, too, like if those are the four teams remaining, it is what it is. We could see another one of these like teams that we saw were on like the outer focus of the playoffs, kind of a team like a Charlotte, a team like Chicago, take a step this year, not necessarily towards contention, but to build up what we saw what Orlando was doing 2 years ago when they got Brent Caro and then started to build up with Wagner and then all these other guys. So I think and I'd be honest too, like I think the West is deeper and more interesting at periods of time, but the East, it's only bad because perceptionally everyone saw the two top playoff teams essentially go off the board.
Yeah.
And because of that, perceptionally, it has to then be filled by Orlando, who is not exactly the, who is, I would say, a great playoff series team, but, you know, regular season team, like, no one is jumping over themselves to watch Orlando Magic games at this period of time.
Well, and this is, what happens this season is going to be fascinating for the next several seasons in the East, because the opportunity that Boston and Indiana have provided by taking their gap years here is really going to help Orlando and Atlanta to kind of grow up. These are going to be the two teams that I feel, and I think a lot of people feel, are next in line behind the Cavs and the Knicks. That next tier, I expect them both to take a step forward. And in the case of Orlando, it's really, really fascinating because, again, there's not a lot of room for nuance generally in sports talk. As we all know, everything is so clickbait oriented these days. But, I mean, Orlando proving in the offseason two things can be true at the same time. Desmond Bain, a guy who I believe had never even made an all-star team, was that an overpay for him? It basically, yeah. I mean, and again, let's throw the whole Luka thing out of the mix, because the all-time ripoff that was committed there, you can't compare that to it. Just because Dallas got ripped off so heinously, it doesn't mean that's not the bar for every other team from here on in. But Bain, based on that, four number ones, not so much. But again, I've always really, really, really liked this guy's game, and he's perfect for them. He's absolutely perfect for what they were lacking. So it's like, was it an overpay? Yeah, but they got the guy that they needed, so it's hard to ding them too much for that.
No, and I think, again, Orlando, I would say, is probably the biggest competitor to the Knicks and the Cavs, because, like we saw, they can muck up a playoff series, and when you can muck up a playoff series, you have a legitimate chance to win. And again, what was their issue last year, Rick? Three-point shooting. And what do you think they got better with in the offseason? Three-point shooting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's, you know, you've got them making that acquisition. But again, a consequence of what happened with Boston, where they were already going to be facing the pressure to break things up financially here. This just accelerated that. You end up seeing Porzingis going to Atlanta. So again, a young team on the cusp right now, and a number of excellent young, super athletic young players. You know, one of the most athletic teams in the league, bar none. You add Porzingis in there. Again, it is a matter of timelines right now. What does this do with the overall timeline? Is there kind of a clash? But I think rather than like in the case of Houston, where I questioned about whether it helped or hurt, I think getting Porzingis there, it's an unmitigated plus. Because I think particularly in the landscape of the Eastern Conference, where there's room to really advance, I think, again, yeah, Atlanta is going to take a step up this year. And like, and as I've said previously, I mean, if even one or two of these young players become, and I'm leaving Young out of the mix here, he's already a shooter, but anybody else really becomes a shooter out of that mix, Atlanta in the next couple of years will be a championship caliber team.
Right, and the one big thing I would say, too, just with Atlanta is that for this season, I feel like outside of the Blazers and the Spurs, they are the most intriguing team. Because the one thing, if you saw last year, like, and they had some good games against Cleveland and New York in both of those scenarios where they either blew them out or they barely won. A guy like Porzingis really does help them out because they did not have a floor spacer. They were essentially using a Neko Okongwu in Clint Capella. So adding a guy like Porzingis, who you're not expecting him to get 20 and 10 a night. Right. But if you get a guy who can help spread the floor and increase their bench, and again, it's the second year of the forgotten man in that last draft class of Zachary Richaud. So he definitely impressed during Eurobasket. He has an opportunity himself to kind of get himself in that pecking order of being potentially the next guy on that roster. And it feels like, to me, and then another guy that I think we both have high praise for is Jalen Johnson, who lost most of his season due to an injury. But
yep.
Again, if it wasn't for the fact, I kind of believe in Orlando's playoff mettle more than the Hawks right now. You go top to bottom, if things break their way, I would not be shocked to see the Atlanta Hawks in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I mean, it would take a number of things to go their way, but it is possible, certainly. And again, Dyson Daniels, getting him from New Orleans and one of the all-time great ripoffs, which prefaced another of the all-time great ripoffs. They're going to have New Orleans' unprotected pick next year,
yeah.
And the Pelicans are going to be absolute ass for yet another season, spoiler alert. So you picture Atlanta adding another pillar into this mix a year from now. And
I mean, one of the brutal fun ironies of this entire situation, because that Pelicans pick is probably going to be in the lottery.
Yeah.
And ironically, guess who is in the lottery this year? Dash yeah. Daniels, his Dyson's brother.
That's
so
right.
We
That's
could
right.
see a Daniels to Daniels cover. But again,
yeah.
And again, I'll give the Atlanta Hawks and their GM a lot of credit. They were very aggressive in the offseason, even yeah. before all this chaos even happened, really.
Yeah.
So, essentially 2 years in, like this, I will note this too, about 2 years ago, this team was kind of messy. Like we're both like, well, Trae Young might get traded. This might be a blow up scenario. Then they get the overall number one pick. They get a guy like Richaud who's young, but he's going to learn and he'll be a solid piece in the NBA and a potential all-star if he can figure out how to expand his range and sort of get to the basket with more clarity at periods of time. But again, it feels like those are the four right now in the Eastern Conference. But again, we've seen this before. A team is going to come out of nowhere in the Eastern Conference, same in the West. And I kind of feel like there's a handful of teams right now in the East where a lot of movement could be made, considering there's two gap years for Boston and Indiana.
And again, the team that did that a year ago, and if you're talking about anybody that could dislodge one of those four teams, a lot of people are going to say Detroit. I think it's one of these things where, again, now I'm a big critic of, in the NBA, the whole plexiglass theory, that like a team will invariably take a step back after a year. I don't know that that's necessarily an automatic kind of a thing. In the case of Detroit, I don't think they're going to advance further than they did a year ago. I'm not even necessarily talking so much the playoffs. I think they're going to be in the same range of about 50 wins or so. And I think, again, it remains to be seen that, you know, as I've said previously, comparing across sports here, J.B. Bickerstaff, is he the Marty Schottenheimer of coaches? He can lift the team from being ass up to being a playoff contender. Can he take them further than that? Marty never could. Marty never got the team into the Super Bowl. Can Bickerstaff do that? Does he have the growth left in his career? So he has as much to prove as everybody on that roster not named Cade Cunningham.
Right, and I think the one big thing that you have to know is that they did improve their shooting in the offseason, and that you have another year of sort of allowing Cade, because the big thing that we saw the year that they were just absolutely terrible, they just had no scoring around him. So he was kind of forced to play that dribble penetration game the entire game. So now you get to spread the floor a little bit. Everything isn't perfect there, but you're going to see a lot of some of their younger guys like Jalen Duren take another step. And again, if as we look sort of some of the rest of the Eastern Conference, we know there's two or three teams that are just not going to be great. But then there's also a bunch of other teams who we just don't know what they're going to be, like a team like Toronto, a team like, you know, the Wizards, who may take a step after a couple of gap years of just being bad. So It feels like the top four is pretty solidified in the Eastern Conference. And I would say, you know, Boston's on the outside looking in, trying to see if they have a good year. If they don't have a good year, they'll just rest and take a gap year, hopefully get a decent lottery pick, and then see what ends up happening. And then, you know, one of the things that I also am going to find very fascinating is Brooklyn is not going to be a great team this year, but they could be one of those weird teams that kind of sneak into the play-in. And you have a guy in Michael Porter Jr. and Nick Claxton, and you got some of their younger guys. So it's going to be really interesting to see how Brooklyn sort of navigates this season.
Well, in a league where in recent years, secondary playmaking has become so much more important, and you've seen it in a lot of places, like obviously the Joker in Denver, as far as now, again, they run a lot of the offense through him, but the whole thing of, like, you see in Sacramento now with Sabonis, you know, being a big man. So we look at it in terms of big men and their ability to be playmakers, and Adebayo certainly in Miami, but like throughout the lineup, secondary playmaking is an important thing. Brooklyn in this draft, like, took it to an extreme. Like, a lot of these guys, just very good ball handlers, very good distributors. How much they can all shoot, that remains to be seen. They would have gone higher in the draft if they were lights-out shooters, to be sure. But it's very, very fascinating what they did. People thought that they were going to trade away the picks. I think they used all five first-round picks, as you and I were doing the live coverage on draft night here on the show. So, yeah, Brooklyn is a fascinating team. And I've joked about this sort of like half jokingly previously that like Jordy Fernandez is a guy where it's like it's hard to tank when that guy's your coach because he's going to get the most out of a roster. So it's like you saw like during as the season was going on them like furiously trading away guys like we just don't suck enough yet, guys. Like it could be in the same spot this year. I know Michael Porter Jr. Has already indicated he thinks he's a short-termer in Brooklyn, and he probably is. He doesn't fit with their timeline. But, yeah, you're right. It's an interesting situation this year, but so much more so for the years beyond this year.
Right, and I'd also note, too, Rick, another team that could potentially make a jump is Charlotte. Charlotte had a pretty mad year last year, but there were times when later in the season, Charles Lee, their head coach, was able to figure some stuff out. If LaMelo Ball can stay healthy, they picked up Knepel in the draft. They don't really have a center at this period of time, so that's going to hurt them. But they're just one of those teams that if they push the pace and shoot threes, they could be a very interesting watch.
They could be, and I've got them as a play-in team, actually. And looking at the Eastern Conference, so looking at my picks, I misspoke before. I have the Cavs and the Knicks actually on the same side of the bracket I have Orlando and Atlanta playing each other in the conference semis, the Cavs and the Knicks playing each other. Hence, I have Cleveland over Orlando in six in the conference finals. Just some of my other picks that I have for this year. NBA MVP, Anthony Edwards. I won't give the finals MVP yet because that'll give it away. But Rookie of the Year, Cooper Flagg. Everybody's going to say that. Coach of the Year, Mitch Johnson, because many times it ends up being versus what the bar of expectations is. And if San Antonio is the kind of year I think they're going to have, that guy should win the award. And I've got the Cavs and OKC in the finals, as I was thinking it would be a year ago heading into the playoffs. So any thoughts on any of those observations?
I feel like everything's pretty much on the line there. The one person I would say that it could be a very interesting situation in terms of if something was to happen or someone was able to sort of make their move just in general in terms of coach of the year. This is a weird sort of narrative to say yet again, Rick, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I would not be shocked. I'm going to say this, not be shocked. If the Knicks get the top seed in the East, could we see yet another Mike Brown NBA Coach of the Year?
We could.
We could see it again.
I didn't think you were going to say
Mark. I believe if I'm correct, he would become the first coach ever to win three in a row in three different locations.
Yeah, I think he would be. And so that is certainly that's very much, you know, in the mix here. If they take the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, I certainly think it's right there and that he would at least be one of the leading candidates, no question about it. For the NBA Finals, it is a situation where, I think it's going to be a tough mountain to climb for anybody to take down Oklahoma City. And as close as Indiana came last year, I think that there are teams around the league that might be a little bit wistful because it's always a thing where once you win a title, you've sort of turned the corner, you've proven it, and you have that sort of under your belt. There's a lot of teams the next couple of years I think are going to be wistful about what if Indiana had pulled off the upset? What if they had been able to do it? It would have slowed down Oklahoma City's progression. But I've got OKC going for the back-to-back here. Oklahoma City over the Cavs in six. So that is my pick for the NBA Finals. It's relatively chalky, but as we've seen in recent years, the NBA is a pretty chalky league by and large. I mean, a year ago, Indiana in the finals would have been a shocker, I think, to a lot of people. Oklahoma City, I don't know. People thought they were in the mix.
They were kind of on the proverbial doorstep.
They were in the mix, yeah. So generally speaking, it's some combination of chalk. I have it being the teams I think will be the top seeds in both conferences. Home court advantage can be significant. So how do you see it playing out?
I'm going to go out on a limb, Rick. I feel like everyone's going to hate me a little bit, but love me a little bit more. I'm going Knicks over OKC. I'm going to do it for once.
Wow.
2 years ago, I went out on a limb with Philly and to make it to the finals. It was completely wrong there, but this may be the year, if there was a year, for the Knicks to finally get to the NBA, to finally claim that final title. And then we will say the crowning achievement of Mike Brown's coaching career.
Well, from your lips to Adam Silver's ears, certainly he would love to see that. And
you know what I'd love to see also too, Rick? I'd love to see a Jordan Clarkson Finals MVP somehow.
Yeah. We'll have to see if that ends up being in the mix. I've got SGA being the Finals MVP. Yeah, but in terms,
in most cases, if it was New York, it's going to be Jalen Brunson, obviously.
Probably, yeah. Now, what's fascinating to me is replacing Tibbs with another coach who is, again, more known for offense than he used to be, but that's a very low bar if you think back to the 2000s in Cleveland with Mike Brown. So another defensive-oriented coach. And one of the things is that, again, there are always trade-offs in life, and we saw it with the Knicks a year ago, that they needed the additional punch that they were able to get from Cat, but then inevitably a team that had defined itself as being one of the league's premier defensive teams previous to that wasn't so much and was a little more top-heavy, certainly at that point. Now, again, Tibbs making it worse by leaning on these guys as much as he was. Mike Brown is going to be smarter in terms of not leaning on the starters to onerous degrees the way that Tibbs was doing. But any thoughts on that, the fact that, again, there's been this trade-off and that the Knicks at this point are still not an elite offensive team whilst having sacrificed some of the defensive prowess by getting Tibbs or by getting KAT in the lineup?
I mean, and one big thing, too, I do want to note, too, at least, again, we're recording this early in the preseason, at least for the two games that they played in Abu Dhabi against Philadelphia, you can see the pace of the game has at least changed for the Knicks. Last year was very methodical with Jalen Brunson bringing the ball up court. Now it seems more free-flowing. So I'm very intrigued to see this. And again, very similar to Cleveland, their playoff rotation is going to be very interesting. They're a little bit more guard-heavy than backup center heavy. So, And again, there's still so much. Again, this is a pre-season preview, so there's so much stuff that could still happen. The Knicks could fortify the back of their bench, but
yeah,
again, like I've said, the Eastern Conference is going to come down to Cleveland and the Knicks at this point, unless you know some crazy instances happen where either Atlanta, Boston, or the Orlando Magic jump up into that period of time, but. It's going to be a very just interesting NBA year. It's sort of like it reminds me a little bit of when just before San Antonio's long-term run in the early 2000s, where you're seeing a lot more of these younger teams starting to take shape and starting to make some moves. And you got some of the older teams like, you know, I'll even throw this out with Milwaukee and Miami. We haven't really talked about them that much.
Right.
Where these have been these continuity playoff teams for the longest time. But it almost feels like we're not talking about them enough because Miami didn't really do much in the offseason outside of re-signing Nikola Jokic. And Milwaukee essentially acquired Miles Turner. So, again, there's just so many questions in the Eastern Conference. And I have a feeling most of them will be answered relatively quickly.
Yeah.
But, again, it seems fated that the league would want a Cleveland-New York final.
Yeah, they would love that for an NBA Eastern Conference final, no question about it. And this is a thing where, again, me picking the Cavs to come out of the East, we saw a year ago, you know, everybody in Cleveland has been waiting on, you know, when is Evan Mobley going to take the leap? Well, he did to a degree a year ago, and he became, in my estimation, a top 15 player in the league. And I think this is a year where he takes another leap to where I don't think he's going to be a big-time MVP candidate, but I think he starts to get to be a fringe MVP candidate. Actual MVP candidate could be another year or two down the road. But I think that is something where, again, the continued improvement, the continued evolution, they've talked about running more of the offense through him this year, which, interestingly enough, you go back to the whole thing with Garland early on, not being there in the lineup, the experimentation and everything like that. So getting to see what this team looks like early on, it's going to be very, very fascinating. One need not actually be a lifelong Cavs fan like me to find it very interesting to see what it looks like because, again, you're seeing a team that you expect to be playing at minimum deep into May and figuring out some of the things now that are going to manifest themselves in the spring. As far as being a laboratory in real time, I think it's just going to be fascinating.
I feel like that's the Eastern Conference right now, Rick. It is just a laboratory in real
time. Yeah. We are the poster child, are we not?
Yeah. So, again, I'll be honest too, we've never had a year where we had two elite teams, one that went to the NBA Finals, have gap years before. So we haven't seen this in a while. You'd make the argument, and I saw a lot of the initial season predictions for the Eastern Conference. Like, there's a lot of guys that are just saying it's either Cleveland or it's New York by default. But again, there are still some teams that could make some moves. And again, we also do not know. There's always the potential where Milwaukee could pick up another piece. Miami might decide to blow it up and trade Hero or Bam at some point. And then, you know, you also have to talk about some of these teams like Charlotte and the Wizards, who, if they just have one or two things fall their way, they can at least be a competitive playoff team. So.
Sure. Yeah, it is going to be fun to watch everything play out. And you talked about before, and as we bring this kind of full circle here, you talked about, you know, right before San Antonio was starting to take their run that they went on. And that was, again, you look at the time frame of this, that San Antonio, the very early sort of stages of what they were doing, the first championship that they won, it was still on NBC. And then that was when it switched over to ABC for the finals subsequently, and it's been there ever since. And it will still be there under the new TV deal. But NBC coming back into the mix, NBC/Peacock. You've got the Thursday nights now with Amazon. The Tuesday nights on NBC, and I think to some degree Peacock, where the second game will be starting at like 11 o'clock at night, Eastern time. So what the numbers will be like for that is anybody's guess.
Coastal elites will not be happy for the West Coast.
No.
West Coast fans who are on the East Coast, they are not going to be happy about that.
They're not going to be happy at all, no. And, again, Sunday nights, and this is going to be really, really fascinating because I think NBC's managed to work it in, I think, with baseball for Sunday nights, but, like, to go year-round with Sunday nights, so Sunday night basketball, taking the time slot after the Super Bowl and working its way in there. So it's going to be something where, again, and of course they got Round Ball Rock. They're throwing all the nostalgia at this thing here and everything that they have. And
I mean, one bigger thing also, sorry if I'm interrupting, Rick.
No.
To bring into Prime, like, this is what going to be, their package is pretty dense in terms of coverage. And you're going to see a lot more of what we saw with Thursday Night Football, where we may see more data analytics. We may see more player tracking that we might not have seen in prior years because, let's be honest, Turner wasn't exactly focused on giving that to people at the end of the day. So it's going to be really interesting to see, because we were in a timeline where there was a huge discussion, is ESPN and Turner great for the league? And now it feels sort of more like we're going to have a little bit more ability to see different coverage and different analysis at a period of time, which I always think is better for the league, because when you have a stronghold in two different groups, you're always going to have one that everybody hates and one everybody loves. So you're going to at least see a lot of mixture. You're going to also see a lot of guys do a lot of double and triple duty everywhere. I didn't think Michael Grady could get any more work, but Michael Grady's getting a lot more work.
That is true. And you mentioned about Turner and it's very, very fitting that we are recording this in Halloween season here, because much like a zombie reaching up through the dirt here, we still have Inside the NBA. It will be appearing on ESPN in ways that still haven't been completely explained to us. I will thankfully be preempting the execrable NBA coverage on ESPN in many instances, certainly for the finals and some other instances here that we have been plagued with for years and years and years and years. So the Inside the NBA crew, it's not going to be exactly the same. They're saying that it's going to keep the TNT Sports branding, but I don't even know how that's plausible.
Well, at least from what I heard, they're keeping the studio area, but they're rebranding it. Because there were some graphic promos that came out recently where it's like Inside the NBA and then ESPN's at the bottom of it. So.
Okay.
But
yeah,
they're keeping, how do I put this? They're keeping the logo the same.
Yeah, and like, and look, and they're still doing it out of Atlanta, I think, because the key part of that was keeping Ernie Johnson in the mix. And he, because of a great past lounge guest here, he, because of family considerations and other things like that, he's not looking to jet set all over the place to do a studio show every week. No. So
and he's still also doing baseball work, too, as well.
That's right. That's right.
So it logically made sense. And yeah. I'll be honest, too, in a timeline where everyone's getting laid off, it's not the worst thing to save some money.
Yeah, that is true. That is absolutely true. So seeing what the coverage is going to be is going to be just, mind blowing. NBC is going to have the All-Star game next year and in the years to come. It'll be from the Intuit Dome in Los Angeles. You can't tell me that the Kawhi Leonard story is not going to be front and center that whole weekend. So there's going to be that. So all the different parts of the coverage here. And of course, I think, the NBA and, or I'm sorry, NBC and Amazon, I think, are going to rotate conference finals coverage, and then ESPN will be a constant with that every year. My guess is that means that they'll always be one network or the other will always be televising the same conference, because ESPN will ping back and forth between the conferences, and if it's every other year, then right. That means.
And again, though, there hasn't been anything, at least from what I've read.
Yeah.
Negatively.
I'm just extrapolating. Yeah.
We work out.
Sure.
I feel like it still has to be announced, even if who's sure. going to have a specific conference final this year. I believe it's going to be NBC, but mm-hmm. there's no definitive answer at this time.
But like logically, it would seem like, because if you're rotating back and forth, it would seem like one of them is going to have the West exclusively, one of them is going to have the East exclusively.
I feel like it's going to be very similar to the last timeline we were in, where they swap off and random years. So
well, that's the thing. ESPN's going to have both of them, because they'll be going every year. So how it ends up being, and if I'm right about that, if I'm right in my guess, there's going to be some real politicking, I'd say, behind the scenes with NBC and with Amazon, because you would think you'd want to be the network that's got the Western Conference both of the years that you're on the deal, as opposed to the Eastern Conference both of the years that you're on the deal. So that could be.
But also one narrative too, Rick, is that if there could be a conference final where it's the Knicks or the Celtics at any period of time. So if I'm the Amazon or NBC exec, I don't know what to pick necessarily. I may get an OKC Houston final versus a Knicks Celtics final or a Cavs Knicks final. So it's going to be interesting.
I think I'd still take the West, though. I mean, that's I don't know. I'm still taking, but one word, Wemby, right? So I mean, that's another two words, Cooper Flagg. So
I signed that also. Note too, Rick. Like it's Amazon took a huge slot in them. This is the first year the in season tournament.
Yeah,
is going to be in on. The NBA Cup is going to be exclusively on Amazon. So it's going to be very interesting to see sort of how that impacts the ratings and then, how sort of everything looks out too. It's like, I also know Amazon's trying to aim their slate also too for the playoffs and summer league and all these other things that are part of the NBA calendar that essentially was mainly NBA TV related. So it's going to be very interesting. The one thing I will say is that I know there's a lot of discussion about the money being spent by the average human trying to watch all these games. But I will say there too, we are also existing in a world where we have now more access than ever. Because let's just be honest, there was a timeline where ESPN and Turner, you could not stream their games, period.
Right. That's true. Yeah. That's true. So you have those possibilities there. And And well, it's a thing too, where as much as fans are simultaneously getting priced out of the live arena experience to a large degree, that's a thing where you can just take the money you were going to be spending on game tickets and put it towards that.
Right, so
kind of evens out.
My thing too is that, again, I understand because we exist in a world where we're all paying for streaming services.
Yeah.
But if you really just want to go with the cheapest option, you're literally, it's under $100.
That is true.
If you want NBA every day of the week, it's under $100. So
that is true. Yeah. So
people can preface that, but
yeah, people can make that happen.
It's going to be very interesting to go back to your last points. Like it's going to be very interesting to see how NBC and Amazon cast themselves in the NBA.
Yes.
Because we saw ESPN was trying to be the news breaking, aficionado company, and Turner was sort of like the fun uncle sort of scenario. And now it's like, ESPN is casting themselves as, we are going to, you know, try to be your home now with the Fun Uncle crew. And then it's going to be interesting to see how NBC is going to build their storylines and how Amazon, because again, we have, for the NBA, have not had a streaming exclusive only package yet.
Right.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle that, because that was one of the big questions with the NFL and making that deal with Amazon for Thursday Night Football. So at least from what I've heard, it's been nothing positive from the NFL people about Amazon. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the NBA treats both the reintroduction of NBC and Amazon to the mix.
Yeah. And ESPN's already had to make one of their adjustments that once Woj retired, sliding Shams right into the mix there, that saved them having to do the thing. I don't know if you'd heard about this, but like in the NHL, I think they had basically said to Emily Capel, like, you're going to be our Woj now, to which she was probably like, wait, what? So, yeah, nothing like just taking a reporter and saying that this is going to be like the scoopmeister for the entire network. ESPN was able to take somebody that was already a scoopmeister from another network and plug them right in the mix. So there is that. But yeah, it's going to be absolutely an amazing regular season, I think, to get to see, and I think a playoffs to match. So look forward to staying on top of the season with you, Ben Hsu. Thank you very much, as always, my man. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1871.